From the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School, this is Work of Tomorrow on Business Radio. Here's your host, Kristen Tervish.
Welcome to Work of Tomorrow on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. I'm your host, Kristen Tervish, and we're here for you every Monday night at 5 p.m. Eastern, followed by replays throughout the week. The purpose of this show is to explore how work will change in times of globalization and digitization. We want to understand the work of tomorrow. In each show, I will talk with experts and leaders from a specific industry and get their insight on what is happening today and how it is changing in the future. One of the fastest growing job providers of the 1990s has been the call center industry. Agents, many times in faraway countries, are equipped with a phone and a connected computer, and they help us consumers to open a bank account, to book travel, or to install our internet router. But in the days of Siri and Alexa, why still talk to a human being? Will those call centers and customer service jobs be soon replaced by automation? To help us understand this topic, I have two wonderful guests today. Angela Garfinkel is the founder and president of Quality Contact Solutions, an outsourced call center service and leading telemarketing firm. And in the second half of the show, I will talk with Mikhail Naumov, who is the co-founder of Digital Genius, a firm that uses AI with the aim of transforming customer service operations. Angela, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Now, Angela, tell us a little bit about the company you created with Quality Contact Solutions.
Absolutely. So we created Quality Contact Solutions approximately 11 years ago to basically help clients that didn't know how to outsource either their call center operation or their professional business-to-business telemarketing sales programs. And we found that in the industry, there was a lack of ability for companies to bring on resources internally because it's very expensive to bring on those specific resources. And so we founded the company, and really our business model is that we work with organizations that have brick-and-mortar call centers that have excess capacity, and we take on the client programs, develop them, identify the key metrics that need to be measured, develop key reporting, and we then place them in qualified brick-and-mortar call centers. We call them owner-operators, and so it's basically a managed business process outsourcing solution.
So the important difference here is the difference between outbound services and inbound
mm-hmm.
services. Can you give us a sense of the scale of your operations, of how many calls or how many seats? Give us just a rough sense of how big of an operation that is.
Sure. So we have 30 work-from-home call center seats that are in a department called QCS at Home. They're a virtual work-from-home organization that handles both inbound and outbound interactions for clients. And then we have 15 brick-and-mortar call center locations, which are owner-operated. And across those 15 locations, we have approximately 500 seats in production. And our model is that only full-time employees are utilized. So for every seat, there is a match of one full-time person, typically working a shift between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Central Time. But because of the different time zones in the U.S., we'll stretch starting earlier and staff later than that in order to accommodate the customers that we're serving across the different time zones.
So you mentioned this virtual call center with people working from home
mm-hmm.
and basically, I guess, was the argument that this allows them to just be activated on a as-needed basis as opposed to full-time employees who come in for longer periods of time?
So actually the work-from-home team, how that got started is we had a client that was working with a different organization. They were using a different vendor. The vendor went out of business, and the client came to us and said, all of these 30 representatives have tremendous knowledge about our business. They were doing professional business-to-business sales to medical accounts. They have tremendous knowledge, and we don't want to lose them. The vendor's going out of business. What can you do? And so we made a decision to basically create a virtual work-from-home team. We hired those 30 people, and so literally overnight they went to work for our organization doing exactly what they had been doing for that client the previous day. So they're working full-time, 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, because we're part of that client's sales team, and we handle the lower-tiered accounts that are not as profitable but still contribute significantly to the client's sales plan and the bottom line.
Now, Angela, in a discussion of call centers and telemarketing, there is some elephant in the room, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is that most
mm-hmm.
consumers, they have some negative associations with, in particular, with telemarketing but also with being on hold in call centers.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting because all of us are consumers and all of us receive telemarketing calls and have customer service experiences. And it is difficult. I used to joke that even my own mother for years didn't tell people what I did because people would look down on the career as a career choice. But really the bottom line is that just like any type of organization and any type of industry, it really comes down to the exact type of work that you're doing and making sure that there's a match between the people and their personalities and the job that needs to get done. One of the biggest factors in call centers is attrition, which can be related to burnout and can be a direct relationship to how they're being treated by the customers who are calling in or how they feel about the calls that they're making on outbound. So one of the things that we do, and I think more companies should do this because I think it would help cut down on attrition in our industry, is we look at clients and we identify if we think that the work is something called worthwhile work. And if we think that the work is something our employees would enjoy doing, they're not going to get beat up, then we will consider moving down the path of bringing that client on board and performing services for them. We turn down timeshare calls, for example. We don't make calls on behalf of credit card companies trying to sell credit card insurance. We're really choosy about the type of work that we do because we know that it's going to hurt our organization when we lose a valuable employee.
So beyond attrition losses, which are, again, you mentioned the high attrition in call center settings, another commonly used metric that, again, is very visible for us as consumers has to do with on-hold time and resolution rates. So what operational things are you doing to kind of move a call center like yours from good to great? If you think about staffing and forecasting, I mean, there's just lots of nuts and bolts that are kind of very operational in nature.
Absolutely. So the number one thing, and you just said it, is staff planning. Being able to intelligently understand what the demand is for phone calls, or we also handle emails and chats and social media interactions. So being able to forecast that and understand what the call volume or contact volume might look like, and then making sure you've got the right staffing available at the right time. One of the best ways that we've found to manage that and to minimize the on-hold times and minimize customer frustration is we blend inbound contacts, and I use the inbound term to refer to calls, emails, chats, et cetera, text messages, et cetera. We blend those with outbound contacts. So we literally will be overstaffed for inbound contacts, and then when there's free time, our systems begin to proactively make outbound calls to follow up on the calls that we already received that day, or to proactively reach out to customers or to do customer satisfaction surveys or whatever it is that's scheduled in queue. But those outbound calls take a secondary position to the inbound contacts.
So as an operations professor, of course, I love that principle of blending these two types of work streams with basically throttling your outbound to have the kind of the spare capacity for the inbound. Can you talk a little bit more about the forecasting without getting too much into statistical details? But so in your settings, is this primarily the forecasting challenges with respect to call volume, how it builds up throughout the day, or is it forecasting for the whole day? What type of forecasting challenges do you face?
So we forecast down to 15-minute increments throughout the day, and it is different by day of week and by day of month and by time of year. And so it actually gets very complicated, and we use a number of different proprietary tools and resources to more accurately do that type of forecasting. It's also very important to have a good relationship with our client's marketing department and customer service team, billing department, anything that can generate a potential customer to need to reach out to the organization to get help is going to impact our, you know, number of phone calls that are coming in and thus our meeting our service levels. And in our industry, service levels are basically typically defined as answering a certain percentage of calls within a certain number of seconds. So very common, a service level goal would be 80% answered within 20 seconds. So as a customer, if you call in and you're waiting more than 20 seconds, just know in the back of your mind that you became a statistic that counted against that call center's goal of meeting their service levels for that particular day.
Can you tell a little bit the difference between chat and call? I would imagine that being on hold in a call center, like every second counts versus in
right.
the setting of chat. I'm slightly more forgiving that mm-hmm. another kind of 30 seconds before the response comes back, not to mention email, where even 10 minutes I would find is a great response time. Can you kind of talk a little bit about those differences?
Yes. So what we find is that you're absolutely right, that the service level for email, if we can respond within 10 or 15 minutes, we have a very happy and satisfied customer. With phone, again, within 20 seconds is the expected response time. And then with chat, what we're finding is that within 30 to 45 seconds, we need to have an initial response. But with our technology, there's a response immediately, because as soon as the chat comes in, the agent is assigned, and then we have a automated message that goes out from that agent's profile that basically says, "Hi, this is Angela Garfinkel. How may I assist you today?" And so that response has already been queued up. And then that buys us a little bit of time to be able to review the customer's record as they're typing what they're looking for and be able to respond to them. One of the challenges, though, is that if we're not staffed appropriately and we do fall behind on chat, for example, what will happen is people will begin to try to contact us using alternate channels. And so all of a sudden we've got a chat in queue. We've maybe even got a phone call that's in progress where they're on hold waiting for someone. And they might even be sending an email or contacting us through text or another possible channel. We had that happen recently where we had a membership association that changed their system at the end of the year in 2017. And essentially thousands of their members could not log into their system, but they were getting email notices that they needed to renew their membership, but nothing was working. So they called us at the last minute and said, "We need help answering all these calls and these chats and these text messages." And by the time we got involved, they were so backlogged, there would be 5, 6, 10 different unique attempts by that particular member trying to reach the organization that we had to sort through, and obviously quite a few upset members as well. So that was kind of an interesting challenge that our team recently experienced that's related to that topic.
Can you guesstimate the difference, or I'm sure you might have really good data on that, between a chat and a call for pretty much the same resolution issue? Which one is more efficient for the agent?
My experience is that the chat is more efficient, particularly for things like password reset, balance inquiries, and things that require us to look up key information, because we can build systems that use APIs to hook into the data and then query the data and return it right into that chat response, versus giving the information verbally, because sometimes giving the information verbally, the customer will take longer to write it down, or, you know, especially password reset might be a long string and might be difficult to be able to spell it back and make sure they've got it done accurately. So it depends, and it's also about customer preference. Customers that prefer chat or text they're just more responsive to that and easier to deal with and happier with the outcome. So we don't really push our customers one way or the other. We really look at it as whatever's the customer preference. We also find that if it gets very detailed, we'll change channels. We'll take a chat and we'll say, "Can I call you?" And then we'll have them enter a phone number and we'll call them immediately. Same agent who was already handling the issue, so that we can continue the conversation in a more dynamic fashion. So that's been a tool that we use successfully and something that helps us transition if we need to a voice call.
From an agent productivity perspective, I would imagine that the agent could handle multiple chats at once, but it's kind of basically impossible to handle multiple phone calls at once.
That's right. And from a customer's perspective, if I'm a business person and I'm on a call, a long conference call, I get a notification there's something wrong with my hotel reservation. For me to chat with hotel.com while I'm on this other long conference call is a lot easier than trying to call them on my cell phone and listen to two conversations at once.
Oh, you just revealed the bloody secret of my life, that whenever I'm on a conference call, I try to do three other things next to that call. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Work of Tomorrow here on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. I'm your host, Christian Kevish, and I have the pleasure of chatting with Angela Garfinkel, who is the founder and president of Quality Contact Solutions. And we're talking about a real operational challenge, which is kind of how to manage, how to staff, how to forecast in call center settings. Now, Angela, a couple of shows ago, I had a guest on the show from PayPal talking about customer contact centers and call center challenges. And I had somewhat naively believed that kind of technology company as PayPal was that basically they would really love to do everything through AI and kind of maybe chat, but really didn't like talking to their customer. I was surprised by the answer of the vice president of customer contact at PayPal, who said that really for them talking to customers is a very helpful way to just stay in touch with what customers want and kind of stay human in that way. Is beyond getting the transaction settled, is that kind of that two-way interaction between human beings, is that something that customers turn to you?
It is, and one of the things that our management team does to add value for our clients is we listen to a percentage of calls and we review a percentage of chats and text messages and emails on a daily basis. We call it quality monitoring, but one of the key deliverables we give our clients as a result of all that monitoring is a summary of what we're hearing from the customers or from their prospects. And that's insanely valuable to the clients because it allows them to identify maybe a change in sentiment in the marketplace about their product or service. It allows them to identify what the competition's doing because customers will often share either frustration or provide information trying to get our organization to provide either better pricing or a different quality of service. So through quality monitoring, we're able to hear, you know, literally thousands of interactions on a daily basis and summarize that in a meaningful way for decision makers within the client organization.
So speaking of monitoring and coaching, I mean, so I would imagine as part of that, you're helping the agents also to, you know, improve their game. How does the kind of the organizational structure look like in the call center? So at the kind of the worker level, the associate level is the employee who is in the seat handling the call. Somebody who is the kind of what in a manufacturing setting we would call the foreman or forewoman, the kind of the next level up. How many people are kind of supervised by that next level up when there is a manager or a supervisor involved?
So typically we see a range of 8 people on the front line up to 15 people on the front line for every supervisor that's working on a client program. And the reason for the large variance is because on a sophisticated business-to-business sales program that has many different components, then we see lower ratios where one supervisor might only have a span of control of 8 people. For less difficult programs and programs that where the employees have been doing the same thing for a very long time and have really excelled and are hitting all of the metrics that are important to the client, both quality and productivity, we'll see a ratio of 1 to 15. But speaking of that, it's not just the supervisor. In the call center, there's a coworker that does the quality monitoring. And typically, for every 50 people that are on the front line handling calls or making calls, there's one quality monitoring person. And then in a typical call center, then there's a separate team that does training. And that training would be including new hire training, preparing people to handle their first phone calls for clients, as well as client-specific training that equips them from a systems perspective, from a branding perspective, from a process perspective, and from a either sales or customer service perspective, making sure that the frontline people are equipped to represent the client effectively.
So in my tenure in the call center, starting with the kind of the newly trained associate doing my first call towards the oftentimes, as we mentioned, was the attrition losses, very kind of soon departure. How much improvement is there in my skill of resolving a call? So something that took me 5 minutes maybe in my kind of my first work week, does this go down to three minutes by the time that I've been with you for a year?
It does in most instances because of what we call after-call work. So the conversation may not necessarily take a lot less time if it's a voice call, but typically there's a requirement to note what happened on the phone call with either a disposition in the system or notes in the CRM like Salesforce or NetSuite. And, noting that information for a new person can take some time because there's a lot of pressure on them to make sure that they get it just right because business decisions will be made based upon what's input into the systems following the call.
So there's this wrapping up the call. Is that something also you see the biggest quality difference in, or is it so standardized that you finish a call and kind of basically write these notes, I finish it, and we kind of all agree on what the standard is?
So that kind of in our world varies a little bit on a client-by-client basis because we're typically working in our client systems. Some of their systems are very advanced and allow us to select preset dispositions and preset descriptions of what happens so that the reps are not free-form typing over and over again the same thing. Other client systems don't have that much of a standardized process in place. So what we find is that it takes a little more training and it takes a little bit more coaching to ensure that the reps are adequately updating notes and putting dispositions in when the clients don't have those more advanced systems.
So, Angela, well, if we had talked maybe 10 or 15 years ago, the kind of the threat to the call center jobs here in the United States had been primarily an outsourcing story mm-hmm. with jobs going to the Philippines or to India. Now, increasingly, there is this kind of this AI-based threat, and I think as consumers mm-hmm. we're familiar with it, we are calling a call center, and rather than talking to a human being, we're talking to a computer. How is that impacting your work?
So what we're seeing, what we're seeing is that the calls that do go to live agents are increasingly more complex because we do want to automate with AI and with advanced systems, things like password resets and balance inquiries. So the things that can't be handled by AI and decisions that might need to be made for the customer and escalations that may be warranted need to be done by humans. And so it really puts even more pressure on the live people and the calls that they're handling. Also, oftentimes by the time it reaches a live person, the consumer is very frustrated. And so it takes a much more emotional interaction and it allows, basically it takes a lot more emotional intelligence for that rep to be able to maybe de-escalate the situation, understand exactly what the issue is that the customer has, and then help them resolve it and not lose that customer going forward.
So is in the modern world, the transactional, the easy tasks get automated, mm-hmm. and so the first reaction might be, well, then there's less work to be done that is left. Mm-hmm. But is this compensated for by the world just getting more mm-hmm. complex and more fast-moving that the total number of service requests is going up and so the even if half of that is going to be served by Siri, it's the total volume for you, is it flat? Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Mm-hmm. How do you see that kind of the total human service jobs trend develop?
We're seeing the total volume increase, and I believe that it's because of the shrinking number of face-to-face interactions that we all have. I buy my insurance from Geico. I speak to a call center rep. I order from Amazon. If I have a customer service issue, I chat with an Amazon representative. I need a cleaning service for my house, and I go to the web, and I text a provider that offers services in my area. For all three of those things, I probably would have done those things face-to-face in the past. So I think there's a pretty big shift toward use of basic call center-type services in the day-to-day because of less and less face-to-face interaction that we all have in our daily lives.
So from the agent perspective, how much flexibility is there in the sense that can the agent who just helped us book a Geico insurance, mm-hmm. can that person help you with the house cleaning as well? Is there enough cross-training in the more experienced agents that you as the operator of the call center can deploy them on very different types of calls?
In theory, yes. There's different approaches to that, though. Some companies that are very large in our space, that's really what they specialize in, charging on a per-minute or per-transaction basis, and they literally have pools of thousands and tens of thousands of people that are cross-trained and skilled to handle all these different types of interactions for different types of clients. In our world, we like to dedicate the team members, and as I said previously, when they're not handling an incoming call, they're making an outbound call. When that's not possible, we do cross-train, but we like to not cross-train to more than three different types of calls, because we want them to be specialized and confident with what they're handling. And it's very difficult to switch between too many different things within a single workday.
If I were to speak into your call center right now, for example, what percentage of the agents would be doing outbound calls, inbound calls, and what percentage of the agents would be sitting idle because they just need to be alert for the next call coming in?
So on a Monday, Mondays are really busy, and for whatever reason, holiday Mondays are even busier. Consumers use days like today to make some additional phone calls to customer service to resolve things that have been on their list for a while. If you walked into one of our call centers today, I would venture to say that 65% would be handling inbound phone calls and interactions, including the email, chat, and text. And probably 20% would be talking on outbound calls, and the remainder would be in either some form of idle, whether it be waiting for the next outbound call to queue or whether it be waiting for the next inbound interaction to queue.
So you know this industry well and have been at this for a while. If you could pick any kind of customer service transaction job, what would be the favorite seat that you would take in the house?
This is kind of fun. We do a lot of work for the radio industry, and those are my favorite calls because what it is it's a call that emulates what Arbitron and Nielsen do for the ratings for the radio. And so they're very fun phone calls. They're actually outbound calls, and we just call and ask people if they would like to listen to the radio. And hardly anyone hangs up on us. Hardly anyone says no. We never get cursed at. And it's a fun phone call because people genuinely have good feelings about their local radio station.
What better way to close this show for this first half? Never get angry about your radio stations, and moderators don't curse. We need to take a short break right now. When we come back from the break, we'll continue the discussion about customer service centers with Michaela Naumoff, who is the co-founder of Digital Genius, a firm that really tries to use AI to replace and transform customer service operations. At this point, let me thank Angela for helping us understand the industry. And stay warm wherever you are. We'll be back right after the break.
Thank you.